What role did the government play in the Gulf oil spill?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Today, the Secretary of the Interior heads to Capitol Hill to testify before two Senate committees about the fatal explosion and massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Until now, Congress has focused on the role of BP and private companies in the disaster. But today that changes. Marketplace's Alisa Roth is with us now live to talk about it. Good morning, Alisa.
Good morning.
So Interior Secretary Ken Salazar testifies today. So do Coast Guard officials and others. What are they going to talk about?
Well, these hearings are really going to focus on the government role in all this. So we can expect a lot of questions about regulations, what people are calling the lax oversight of offshore rigs. We'll also hear about the cozy relationship between regulators and the industry.
And meanwhile, President Obama says he's putting together an independent commission to investigate the disaster. What can you tell us about that?
It'll be similar to commissions that investigated other disasters, like the Space Shuttle Challenger and Three Mile Island. As far as who's on it, the idea is to get people who are completely unconnected to the various agencies and so on that are involved in the mess. And the president could announce the names on that panel sometime this week.
And we should talk about gushing oil, Alisa. How are cleanup efforts going?
BP is saying that it's now collecting about 40% of the oil that's spilling out of the broken rig. Of course, that means 60% is still ending up in the water. This is how Mary Landrieu, the senator from Louisiana, put it in a hearing yesterday.
The problem is this blowout is putting more oil in the water in 1.5 days than has been put in this water in the last decade. That is startling.
And scientists are now pretty sure the spill will get as far as Florida, if not further.
That's Marketplace's Alisa Roth. Alisa, thank you.
You're welcome.
And speaking of oil, when you hear about Americans importing energy, you probably think of oil from foreign countries. But a new report out today shows how some U.S. states are spending lots of money importing energy from other U.S. states in the form of coal. The report is from the Energy Advocacy Group, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner tells us more.
The Union of Concerned Scientists found that 11 states each spend more than $1 billion a year importing coal from other states or abroad. Georgia, North Carolina, and Texas are the biggest spenders. Some Midwestern states import, too. Barbara Fries co-authored today's report.
In Ohio, nearly three-quarters of the coal that they burn in their power plants came from elsewhere.
Fries contends importers should invest some of that money instead on energy efficiency and renewables. Mark Durbin at Ohio's First Energy says his utility is starting to do that. They plan to convert one of their 6 Ohio coal plants.
Our goal is to have that plant burning 100% biomass, and we're working to make that happen.
First Energy has no choice. Ohio is now demanding that 12% of the state's energy come from renewables by 2025. Half those renewable sources must come from Ohio. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And now it's time for us to do those numbers. A bit of a rebound today across the world. In fact, you saw it yesterday on Wall Street when, at the end of the day, the Dow staged a furious comeback and turned a 180-point loss into a slight gain, while the rebound continues today in both Asia and Europe, with stocks higher there. And in corporate news this morning, Home Depot just said it's increasing its profit forecast for the rest of the year. Yesterday morning, Home Depot's rival Lowe's reported that it was reducing its forecast, and its stock took a beating.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Citrix, offering GoToMeeting, allowing people to present, demonstrate, and train online. More at gotomeeting.com/market. And by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality. American Public Media presents The Great Textbook War, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the Batten Institute at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
For the first time ever, the U.S. Census Bureau is counting same-sex couples who self-identify as married, even in states where gay marriage is illegal. From Austin, Texas, KUT's Nathan Bernier reports on what that information could mean for marketers.
On a quiet residential street in Austin, Kermit Johns runs a small investment advisory firm. He's been with his male partner for 36 years. And when Johns received his census form, he marked married, even though he lives in a state where gay marriage is banned.
I did that because I'm an honest guy. And I certainly don't have any secrets from the United States government. I'm a taxpayer like everybody else. So I answered honestly.
In this census, he'll be counted as married. That was not the case in 2000. When gay people checked the box for married on their census forms 10 years ago, it was changed by the Census Bureau to unwedded couple. Linda Golden is a marketing professor at the University of Texas. She says being able to count gay couples who self-identify as married will be gold for advertisers.
You can use it to find out, are there enough people to make it worth spending the money to market to this geographical area? That in itself is huge.
Well, I think it's interesting. If we look at it from 10 years ago to today, one thing I think you'll find is that there'll be many, many more same-sex partners in rural America and suburban America.
David Paisley is with Community Marketing, Inc., based in San Francisco. His firm targets gay consumers. He says for marketers like him, it's important not only to know where gay people live, but also the kinds of relationships they have with each other.
So, for example, if I was looking to sell, say, luxury cruises, I'd probably be targeting couples.
And the census information will tell marketers which communities have a larger percentage of gays and lesbians in long-term relationships. But marketers won't be able to get their hands on this information until next year when raw census data is released. In Austin, I'm Nathan Bernier for Marketplace.
And finally, sleep researchers are warning that reading on an iPad before bedtime may cause insomnia. Northwestern University's Center for Sleep says the light from electronic screens can trick your brain into thinking it's daytime. So apparently you're better off reading a book in bed. Of course, to do that, you will have to turn on the reading lamp. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.